Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, June 10th, 2026, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is out playing. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right, so what's going on with us? Well, let's see. So leg is not too bad. Pediatrics are not too bad at the moment. I'm able to ride my bike. I did have a cold when I got back from Florida, and I think I had a bit of post-viral syndrome. So if you have long vac syndrome, which I am pretty sure I have, so that means that I got the COVID-19 vaccine and then I had subsequent symptoms. And right now I'm doing pretty well, but they do tend to come and go. And sometimes if I'm very stressed, I will get symptomatic. And my symptoms look like kind of migraine or aura. So blurry vision, pressure in my head, not so much headache. I don't get true migraines where I get extreme nausea and vomiting or anything like that. But what I do get is my nervous system is off. I feel a bit literally off balance, and I will sometimes have tremors. I hadn't had tremors in a very long time. And of course, my naturopath, who I have connected with over Lyme disease, thinks it's still Lyme disease. And I don't know if I still have Lyme on board if I still have spike proteins on board. My primary care physician thinks I still have spike proteins on board, and he therefore wants me to take the special enhanced N-acetylcysteine, which I was taking for a long time. And then when I got a flare, I thought maybe I was having a mast cell activation, because you can get that from taking N-acetylcysteine over time if you are sensitive to sulfur. I'm probably not sensitive to sulfur compounds. My liver probably clears them just fine because I take glucosamine sulfate. I'm taking glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM, which all have plenty of sulfur in them, and I don't react to them. I'm doing just fine with them. So I'm going to go back to taking that enhanced N-acetylcysteine because I'm just wondering if I may have had an increase in my D-dimer, which happens to me sometimes. It happened the last time I had a cold, and I didn't get my D-dimer checked this time. But of course, Dr. Guardia will probably check it the next time I see him in a few weeks. And so I'm going to go back to taking the NAC. The other thing about N-acetylcysteine is very interesting. It's a great antioxidant. It's a sulfur-bearing antioxidant, so it has the sulfur molecules are negatively charged, so they will grab onto heavy metals. Heavy metals, things like cadmium and lead and mercury, anything you might encounter in your environment, they are positively charged. So sulfur compounds will tend to drag them out of your system if you have extra ones. So it's great, great detoxifier that way. And then there are numerous compounds in your liver that are involved in detoxification that require silver for help. And then you have your glutathione system. So anytime you take on sulfur, you will enhance your glutathione function. And glutathione is another enzyme that can, among other things, detox out heavy metals. And it also is a general detoxifier. It's one of the great antioxidants in our system. So when you ingest sulfur, it's helpful for that. So N-acetylcysteine boosts the level of glutathione in your system. N-acetylcysteine by itself is a great antiviral. So you can take it when you have a cold or if you have pneumonia or the flu, and it can help to calm down your pneumonia. It's also a great mucolytic. It thins mucus. So I hadn't been taking it, and I thought it was enhancing my symptoms, but I'm not sure it was. So I'm going back to taking it. I'm going to take the enhanced kind, which is only 200 milligrams, and I take one of those twice a day. I'm going to go back to doing that. So I remember when I was taking it, I did feel better, and I had more energy until I got that flare, and the flare maybe had nothing to do with the NAC. I don't know. The other thing that I notice is N-acetylcysteine, when you're taking it, it helps you to feel calmer. And it's especially helpful if you have the MTHFR anomaly of the A1298 type. And N-acetylcysteine will help you process your methylated B vitamins better. And people who tend to be anxious can benefit from N-acetylcysteine. And N-acetylcysteine, regardless of whether somebody is known to have an MTHFR anomaly, N-acetylcysteine seems to help with habits. Like, so if you have OCD, or if you have some kind of a habit like biting your nails or picking your nails, or I had a friend who picked his skin, people who have trichotillomania where they pulled their hair out. So little habits like that. So I'm a nail biter, and kind of embarrassed to admit it, but there it is. And I noticed that when I was taking the N-acetylcysteine, I had less interest in biting my nails. In fact, to the point where when I went and visited my mother, she said, "Hey, your nails are not a lot longer. It looks like you haven't been biting them as much." And I said, "Yes, that's true. I keep them on the short side because, you know, I'm a practitioner. When I put my hands on people, I can't have long nails. So even when I get a manicure, I have them keep them short." But meanwhile, I had been less interested in biting my nails. And I noticed that when I had stopped taking the N-acetylcysteine, I was tending to bite my nails more. So I'm going back to it. We're going to see what happens. We're going to see if my energy improves. We're going to see it, because I'm wondering if I have a little spike protein activity. I did read that it is possible if you have long vac syndrome. So long vac syndrome is you reacted to the spike proteins from the COVID vaccines versus reacting to the spike proteins from actually having COVID. And I had symptoms from the vaccine long before I had actual COVID. Actual COVID was not that bad for me. And who knows if the actual COVID wasn't that bad because I had been vaccinated. That is a possibility. But I clearly had long vac syndrome. I clearly had immune issues and autonomic nervous system issues from the vaccine. And I would say there's sort of like a migraine, but I wouldn't call it an actual migraine. Once in a while I will get actual ocular, like visual flashing lights. But if I get a headache, it's not an extreme headache, because I'm very blessed in that headache. I only get headaches if there's something really wrong. Like if I do too much caffeine and then I'm withdrawing from the caffeine, I'll get a headache from that. I'll get a headache if I'm really sick. So if I have real COVID or if I have a real cold, I might get a headache. But I'm not somebody who gets tension headaches or gets frequent. Like if I get migraine-ish symptoms, I get the autonomic symptoms, not so much the headache symptoms. I will feel pressure in my head. And then the other thing that I get are tremors. And so I thought I was doing well. I was very excited because I went on a 30-mile bike ride last weekend. It was very good. And then I did a couple shorter rides twice more in the week where I climbed some hills, and I did well with those. And then on Thursday, I had tremors. And I was supposed to do a very hilly ride today, and I bailed on it. I didn't do it because I was concerned about being out that long, being out in the heat. It was a hotter day today with humidity, and I thought it wasn't a good idea for me to be on the hills and be in the heat today. So I did a shorter ride. I did a little out and back. I was out for just over an hour, and that's all I did. And I didn't get to see my friends. And the mountain laurels, so we wanted to go see the mountain laurels. So, you know, the mountain laurels is the state flower of Connecticut, and it's really beautiful. And I hadn't seen any mountain laurels yet. And then we went to the store's farmer's market, and behind where Tobacco Road had set up, I was like, ah, look at that. There they are. There's some mountain laurel bushes there, and they're the gorgeous pink kind, like dark pink. And some of the flowers were open. Most of the flowers were still buds, and because they were closed, they were this gorgeous deep pink. And so my friends who had gone up to the Mountain Laurel Preserve in Union said they were mostly not open yet. So the thing is, it's so hard to hit the week correctly, and the club has various rides planned, and this was the only date. Last year, I think when we planned it on Father's Day weekend, they were mostly done. And this year, it was a colder spring, so they open later, and they're barely open in stores. And stores sits at about, I mean, stores center is probably at about 600 feet, and Union is closer to 900 feet or 1,000 feet. and it's in a woods, so it's cooler. So the mountain laurels weren't quite open. So it would be useful if you want to go see the mountain laurels, and if you want to go to the preserve in Union, thing to do is maybe wait a few days, or wait till next weekend. Great Father's Day outing, and go see the mountain laurels. They're just gorgeous. What I understood is as they dropped in elevation, when you go through the Yale Forest on Kinney Hollow Road, you're dropping rapidly in elevation. And so you're going, you know, you're up in at 900 to 1,000 feet at the preserve, and then you drop down, you probably drop down to, I don't know, 400-500 feet when you get into Eastford. And so you're dropping, you know, a significant number of feet. And as you're going down, there's more bushes, and they were ahead in bloom. But in stores, they were only half open. So look, the mountain laurels are something to look forward to this week. But I didn't want to climb those hills today, so I didn't. And now I'm feeling better. I took one of those N-acetylcysteines. I'm going to take another one after I finish recording the show, and hopefully I'll be better. So N-acetylcysteine is very interesting. It's a very it's supposed to kill or break down spike proteins, and it will go after pretty much any virus. So you can, N-acetylcysteine is something that can be taken if you have a cold, the flu, Epstein-Barr, what have you. So if you're somebody who has Hashimoto's thyroiditis, remember that there's a relationship between chronic Epstein-Barr virus and Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So if you have Hashimoto's thyroiditis, it's a good idea to get tested, have your Epstein-Barr early antigen tested. And if it is elevated, have your practitioner do something to help you fight viruses. Things like vitamin A, elderberry, St. John's wort, Isatis, Chinese skullcap, NAC. Vitamin C, zinc, all of these things can be helpful. And, you know, you don't have to take all of those things. Although I take a lot of those. I take elderberry, I take N-acetylcysteine, I take vitamin A, and zinc. So why did I get a flare? You know, I mean, there's probably a stress component. And my understanding is you can get an ordinary cold, just in a rhinovirus. And if you already have long back syndrome, it can kick up. Since your immune system can get overwhelmed, and so you can have a flare of whatever autoimmune process is causing your long back syndrome. And I think that's what happened to me. So one of the things that helps me is taking it easy, because, you know, I came back from Florida and I'm very busy, and it's the bike riding time of year, and I want to ride my bike. So I have to ease back into it. I still have some pain in my leg. I must say I was feeling kind of twisted up. And then yesterday I went to my chiropractor and he said, "Whoa, your pelvis is out. It's rotated. And your knee, your right knee is rotated in all different directions. And your neck is out too." And so he fixed me all the way down and I felt a lot better. So don't forget that it's a good idea to go to your chiropractor. Like if you're feeling off, not even necessarily having pain, but you're feeling off in any way, chiropractors don't just fix your musculoskeletal system. They access you through the musculoskeletal system. But if you have other things going on, they can help with that. So if you have a cold, you can go to the chiropractor. Although some chiropractors don't want you to come in if you're acutely sick. If you're getting over your cold and you're not contagious anymore, then sure, you can go in. If you're having digestive problems, if you're having biliary problems, if you're trying to detox, chiropractic can absolutely help. The other thing is, I was talking to a friend who had migraines, and the weather has been crazy in Connecticut. It's been cold and then it's been hot and lots of extremes. Like a week or two ago, we were getting 48 degrees. In fact, it went down to the 30s maybe a week ago. And today it was in the mid 80s and humid. So these extreme fluctuations in temperature will bring on people's migraines. So the interesting thing about that is that a migraine, a migraine specifically, what's going on is you're having an overflow of circulation into your brain. And that flow of circulation is in part mediated by what's going on with the hypothalamus. And so you have hypothalamus dysregulation, and hypothalamus also regulates body temperature. So if there are changes, fluctuations in body temperature, hypothalamus gets confused, and you can have whatever your autonomic thing is. And if your autonomic thing is you get migraines, you might get migraines. And my thing is I can get tremors. And I didn't realize this, but if your hypothalamus is dysregulated and you're hypothalamus isn't sure if it's hot or cold, it'll cause you to shake. You'll get tremors. So that's part of my autonomic thing. When my autonomic nervous system is dysregulated, I will get tremors. And they're not seizures because when they're happening, I'm completely conscious. I can still think. I can even breathe through them and get them to calm down. So they're not the same thing as a seizure because I'm completely conscious when they're happening. But they're that my head will shake and my torso will shake and my neck will. It's no fun. So this happened to me this week, and I'm just hoping I can get out of it and not have it happen again. And so what needs to happen is more relaxing. So we're doing this show tonight. We're going to get it done, and then we're going to relax the rest of the weekend. And hopefully we'll do some easy bike riding. And so that next week I have to lead another bike ride. So we'll see how that goes. So that's what's going on with that. So the other thing to remind you is if you are somebody who gets migraines, remember that getting physical medicine can help you get out of migraines. It can also help to prevent migraines so that your circulation is nice and even. Going to your chiropractor regularly can help you both to abort migraines as well as to prevent them. Going and getting acupuncture, getting massage, getting physical therapy, any kind of body work is going to help. If you like to go for a float, you know, go in a float tank, that can help too. You can take Epsom salt baths, anything where you get your body to relax. Anything that you can do also to access the ventral vagus nerve, that is to access your rest and digest, is going to be helpful. I know that if I'm having tremors, one of the things that's unfortunate is sometimes the tremors will happen when I'm at work, which is terrible because, you know, I don't feel right. I'm looking at my patient. I feel like something is really off. And then the patient leaves the room and I lie down in my beanbag chair. Yes, I have a beanbag chair in my office. And then I start shaking. I'm like, okay, autonomic nervous system is screwed up. And I'm sitting there, it's the middle of the day and I have to see more patients. It's just the worst. And so it's so hard when you have a job where you're working with other people or working with the public, and then you have a condition where really what you need to do is go lie down and you can't. That's very difficult. Fortunately, I did have some time between that patient and the next one. So I managed to get myself out of it. But I still don't think that I've gotten enough rest yet. And Saturday is usually my day. There's some junk TV I like to watch. They play reruns of Charmed, and I like to watch that. And then later in the day, they have reruns of the Gilmore Girls, and I like to watch that too. And I find it relaxing. And then, you know, when I get to, I can also just read for pleasure. And the other thing I've been doing is Duolingo. So I'm doing a lot of Duolingo. And right now, crazy me, I'm studying 4 languages. So the languages that I wanted to learn, they were priority languages. I wanted to study Hebrew, which you can study on Duolingo. And so the thing is, because I'm doing 4 languages, I might be having a bit of trouble remembering everything. But, you know, you do a lesson or two a day, and over time, there's a lot of repetition. So you start learning things. And right now, there's a lot of food that I'm learning in Hebrew. So did you know a fish is a dog? Yeah, the word for fish in Hebrew is dog. And the word for beer in Hebrew is bira. And the word for coffee in pretty much every language is coffee or cafe. In Hebrew, in Portuguese, in Italian, and French, it's cafe. it's the same. And lemon also is pretty much the same in all the languages, although, you know, depending what language you're speaking, it's pronounced limon. I think in all the languages I'm studying, it's spelled and pronounced limon. But it's the same thing. So that's easy to remember. So I can say thank you in 4 languages. Hebrew is tod, and thank you very much, is toda rabba. And I can say merci beaucoup in French. I can say obrigado or mucho obrigado in Portuguese, and muchas gracias in Spanish. And Italian is grazie. So that's exciting. I can also say ice cream in a few languages. I don't know how to say, I forgot how to say it in Hebrew, but it's glace in French. And I knew that from way long ago visiting Canada. It's glace. And it's helado in Spanish. It's gelato. So the word for ice cream in Italian is gelato. You know how you go get a gelato? Well, gelato is, that's the word you use for ice cream. And it's sorvete in Portuguese. And did I say all of them? I think so. I just can't remember what it is in Hebrew. If you know what it is in Hebrew, please put it on the screen there. So now I know that. All right. So I had a request from a listener that I talk about tick stuff because it's tick time of year. So we're going to review some tick stuff. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to look at natural tick repellents. So before you go outside, this is something that you can put on yourself. Tick bites can often be harmless and don't cause noticeable symptoms. But of course, we're in Connecticut, so Lyme disease, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, Babesia, Bartonella, Anaplasma, Ehrlichia, good times. And so, of course, you want to try to prevent the tick bites in the first place. For when you get outdoors, tick repellents can help you stay safe. And there are lots of types of pesticides and repellents that you can get. So if you want to get natural tick repellents, that, you know, alternatives to DEET or picaridin or permethrin, there are natural varieties. Among them, there are essential oil blends. And the essential oils will use things like lemongrass, cedar, peppermint, thyme, and geraniol. Geraniol is a big one for helping to prevent ticks. Rose geranium is the big one, the big essential oil that you, if you want to have tick prevention, you want to look for a tick repellent that has a lot of rose geranium essential oil in it. So there was a study that found when applied to clothing, a blend of those essential oils that I just mentioned, it wasn't as effective than other repellents, including permethrin. So that's the unfortunate thing, that sometimes studies will show that the essential oils won't be as effective as the chemical stuff. So you can get Herbal Armor, which has really high in citronella essential oil. You can use garlic oil. The only thing is, then you can smell like a pizza. If you don't want to smell like a pizza, the garlic oil will be hard to use. There was a study that showed that when it was applied to lawns, multiple applications of garlic oil-based repellents may be necessary and can help. And then there's a specific fungus, Metarhizum brunium or Metarhizum anisocleae fungus. These grow naturally in soil and can repel or even kill ticks, and you can get them commercially. You can put them under lawns, and there's a brand name for them. And there was a study of these fungi that showed that they may provide an alternative approach from other insecticides for controlling tick populations. And there was a study that found application of that product is not harmful to populations of non-target bug species. It won't hurt other bugs. It'll just hurt the ticks. Good times. Then there's Nuketone, which is that repellent has the ingredient is found in essential oils of some species of cedar, trees, herbs, and fruit. So cedar is a big tick repellent as well. And there was a comparison of Nuketone and the other blend that I spoke about applied to clothing was more effective after 7 days than commercial brands. And you can apply Nuketone to lawns to repel ticks. And so they're looking at how to optimize the applications. Then synthetic tick repellents, there's IR3535. It's human made and has a similar structure to a naturally occurring amino acid. And the ingredient is effective against deer ticks. The Environmental Working Group recommends against using sunscreen repellent products that have IR3535, since the need to reapply sunscreen would promote overexposure and overuse of the repellent ingredient. So IR3535 is what's in Avon Skin So Soft. That's, remember Skin So Soft? All of a sudden they were finding, when Skin So Soft came out from Avon, they were finding that it worked as a bug repellent. Avon didn't realize this, and then it started, it got approved, and then they started promoting it as an insect repellent. Then there's oil of lemon eucalyptus. I think of oil of lemon eucalyptus as something that protects you against mosquitoes more than ticks. It's a chemically synthesized version of lemon eucalyptus oil. The naturally occurring oil from the tree is processed to contain PMD, paramethane 3,8-diol. Oil of lemon eucalyptus is not the same as lemon eucalyptus essential oil. And OLE may be just as effective against some tick species as DEET. So frequent reapplication is needed. And then there's 2-undecanone. So that's the tomato-based one. There was a 2009 study that compared a product containing 2-undecanone to DEET, IR3535, and OLE applied to cotton cheesecloth, and found that the 2-undecanone had a greater average repellency than IR3535 for one tick species, and a greater average repellency than OLE for other species. No difference in repellency between undecanone between that and DEET was observed. So I have some products at home that contain 2-undecanone. It doesn't smell great. It doesn't smell chemically like DEET, but it smells weird. It's sort of a natural smell, but it's not pleasant. I mean, citronella, the thing with citronella is it smells very citrusy, but it's kind of cloying. And this, I don't know how to describe it. It's like, it smells like sort of an intense tomato derivative, because it is derived from tomatoes. It's very interesting. So if you want to protect yourself against ticks, you can use the repellents. Avoid the areas where ticks live. If you're out hiking, stay in the center of the marked trail. Try to stay out of the areas that are heavier wooded or overgrown with grass and bushes. Make your yard discouraging to ticks. So you keep your grass really short. If you keep your grass really short, it will dry out more. Ticks love moisture. They love hiding and they love moisture. If you took a tick and you put it on the table in front of me and just left it there, it would die. So ticks like tall grass. So if you're walking among tall grass or tall brush, that's where you're more likely to find them. If you're clearing brush, if you have a pile of sticks in your yard and you're cleaning them up, or you're cleaning out the garden, you're likely to find ticks under the plant matter. So if you keep any plant matter short, the ticks are less likely to survive, because they do not do well in heat and they do not do well exposed. It's dryness that exposes them. So in places where it's very hot, like, you don't hear about people getting Lyme disease so much the further south you go. And one reason is, in the extreme heat, the ticks burrow underneath the brush and they don't want to come out, because they know they're going to get killed if they're exposed to the extreme heat. So when you go to Florida, you don't worry as much about getting Lyme disease. You don't see it as much. And if you're in Florida and you have Lyme disease, when you go to the doctor, they may not recognize it as easily. And the thing is, people come from up north and they may fly down and bring ticks with them, and then they get Lyme disease down there and they have to get treated. I did have a patient who she lives up here but has a place in Florida, and she went to the walk-in, and I encouraged her to go to the walk-in. I think I'd done lab work for her and we figured out she had Lyme disease, so we had her go to the walk-in in Florida, and she showed the doc the labs, and they prescribed for her, and they did a good job of it. They had to look into it to see what to do, and then they did it. So they're not going to be as familiar with tick-borne illness out in certain parts of the country, in places where, like, you don't worry about as much in the desert either, again, because it's really hot and really dry. So you don't worry about as much in Arizona and New Mexico and Texas and places like that. But once you get into areas where there's taller grass and moisture, so if you're in the maritime climate of the Pacific Northwest, you know, starting in Washington State, well, even all the way up to Juneau, Alaska, through British Columbia, all the way down Washington State, Oregon, and Northern California, you're starting to see, you'll see tick-borne illness down there. Because, you know, once they make their way out there, it's a great environment for them, unfortunately. So tick protective clothing, you want to wear long sleeves and pants if possible. Yeah, I really want to do that today in the 85 degrees. Not really. But clothing does act as a physical barrier between you and insects like ticks and mosquitoes. You also want to protect your pets, obviously. They can bite your pets and make them sick. More so dogs than cats. Cats don't seem to get Lyme disease as easily as dogs do. And dogs definitely can get anaplasma, ehrlichia, Lyme disease, any of the tick-borne illnesses. So, you know, you talk to your vet about stuff that you can use. There are interesting things out there that are more repellents. There's essential oil collars that you can get. And I bought a product that's very interesting. It's little stickers that you can put on. They're really for children, but stickers that you can put on your clothing that has repellent essential oils in it. So I'm going to try them. I got them, you know, the box wasn't that expensive. So I'm going to stick one on me and stick one on Ron, especially Ron, because he's working outside a lot. So then we'll, because he doesn't spray himself. And I have a great brand of essential oil tick repellent that I will put on if I'm going to be outside for a while. Like if I'm going to go do yoga in the yard, I'll spray myself with tick repellent. And I've been less inclined to do that since I was treating Lyme disease for the last couple of years. And I'm more likely to do my yoga indoors because I'm afraid to lie in the grass, which is just terrible. You know, I went out and filled the bird feeder in my bare feet the other morning, and it felt so nice to have my feet on the grass. And it's something you have to think twice about. Fortunately, Ron is keeping the grass short, and we've had so much rain that the grass grew really high, and he's had to mow it a couple of times. So, but you want to protect your pets because they could bring the animal, the ticks in and then give them to you. You can also get mitts, a tick mitt that you can get, and you can get them at the pet store, and then you can wipe yourself down with the tick mitt, and you can wipe your pets down with the tick mitt. They're only good if the tick hasn't attached, or if it hasn't attached very much, but you can wipe them down, and then you can be alarmed at how many ticks come off on the mitt. And then what do you do with the ticks once you have them? Probably flush them down the drain, put them in the sink, and wash them into the septic, or flush them into down the toilet, because you know they're very hard to kill, like actually kill, and you don't want to let them sit on the table where, you know, if they don't die right away, they could latch onto somebody. So you have to do something with them, and you have to get them away from you. I just wonder if you took the ticks and put them in a solution with essential oils in it, if they would die in that, and then you could just pour that in the garden or something. So anyway, there's these brands of tick repellents that are neurologically active, and animals can get neurological symptoms from them, but they do protect against ticks. So to find and remove them, if you've been somewhere where ticks can be found, you want to inspect your clothing and your body for ticks. If you tumble dry clothes on high heat for 10 minutes, that can kill ticks on your clothing. So, and I know, you know, we don't tumble dry all of our clothes. But, you know, if you're able to tumble dry them for at least 10 minutes, that heat's going to kill them. Like I said, ticks don't do well with heat, which is why you don't hear about people getting Lyme disease down in Louisiana and Florida and Alabama and places like that, Carolinas. Well, the further north you get in the Carolinas, they probably get it. So to remove a tick, you want to use fine point tweezers. Carefully grasp the tick as close to your skin as possible. Use a gentle, steady motion to pull the tick straight out of your skin. If the mouth parts remain in your skin, don't try to dig them out. They'll come out on their own. Clean the area thoroughly with soap and warm water. Dab the bite location with rubbing alcohol. Another thing to consider getting is andrographis tincture. So, and we don't use andrographis as much orally anymore, but it is customary to use andrographis tincture on a tick bite because it will help to kill any tick-borne illness locally. So if you have andrographis tincture, you want to dab at it maybe every couple of hours with a cotton swab and get some andrographis on it. And then, you know, after you remove the tick, you want to watch for a rash at the site of the bite. And if you get a bite or if begin to feel flu-like symptoms such as fever, headache, or body aches and pains, you should see a doctor. You also may want to save the tick. You can save the tick in a glass vial and you can bring it to your doctor. And if your doctor has a way to test the tick itself, that's helpful because then you know what you could be prone to getting. And just because the tick has an illness doesn't mean you caught it, but they would know what to test for anyway. And a lot of doctors will give prophylactic antibiotics. If you have a tick bite, they'll give you prophylactic. They'll give you a couple of days of doxycycline usually. And I will give you herbs. If you came to me and said, I had a tick bite, I have combinations that I can give you. I have one that's pre-mixed by my, I have a colleague who does tick-borne illness. Tessa has a tick-borne illness company, and she sells a lot of tinctures that help to fight Lyme disease. And so she has a combination specifically for when you are first bitten. We ran out of it, so we had lots of other tinctures. So I just mixed something up, and we gave it to a patient who had a new tick bite. So they can transmit a variety of diseases to humans, and there are many types of repellents that you can get. Depending on the product, the repellents can be applied to skin, clothing, or your lawn, and you can get commercially available tick repellents that are available made by natural compounds, like the various essential oils we discussed, the 2-endecanone, which is from tomatoes, and the oil of lemon eucalyptus. So there's various kinds of things. So you have options other than just the DEET, which is chemically. Although if that's all you have and you're going to go into a heavily infested area, you might want to use it. And then just take a good shower when you get back. Make sure you clear yourself of ticks, and then do some liver-friendly stuff, like eat carrots, lemons, beets, drink lemon water, maybe take some milk thistle, take some turmeric, eat some turmeric, take curcumin pills, whatever you want to do, and to protect your liver from the DEET. Because if that's what you got and you're in a tick infested place, you can get out of the DEET. You can prevent yourself from getting DEET toxicity probably easier than unless you're using a ton of DEET every single day. But if you're just out for a weekend hike up one day, you could use the DEET and then just detox, drink lots of water, eat lemon, beet, carrot, take milk thistle, take turmeric, and wash yourself very well, because better to do that than to get Lyme disease, because Lyme disease can be a short, easily treated thing, and it can be a long-term illness that is really hard to fight, and it makes you feel awful. And take it from me, you don't want to get Lyme disease if you can avoid it. It can be treated, but you don't know how bad you're going to get it if you're going to get it. And you could get it very mildly one time, and you can get it really badly another time. And you can get the co-infections as well, which is going to make you feel worse. So, all right. So here's some specific essential oils that help with... I looked at that already. All right. You see this one? Maybe I did that already. All right, so let's talk about what's a Lone Star tick. What's a Lone Star tick? Lone Star ticks can transmit diseases that can be life-threatening. They can transmit ehrlichiosis, STARI, and tularemia. Great, that's just wonderful. And if you've been bitten by a Lone Star tick, get medical attention right away. So Lone Star tick is not the same tick that gives you, the tick that gives you Lyme disease is Ixodes species. So the Lone Star tick is Amblyomma americanum, and it spreads disease in, it's an arachnid like a spider, and like scorpion, spiders, and mites. The adult Lone Star ticks have 4 pairs of legs and no antennae, and it is prevalent in Connecticut and other states with a high incidence of Lyme disease. It doesn't transmit Lyme disease. It's not clear whether it transmits Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And I have had patients in my practice here in Connecticut who I've tested for Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and they've had it. So even though we think of it as something that happens out west, because the Lone Star ticks, if you look at a picture of the Lone Star tick, here, I'll show you on my... I'll show you this picture. If you're looking on YouTube, you can see the Lone Star tick. You could see on its back, it has a Lone Star. So I don't know if it originally is from Texas or not, but it's called that because look at it. It's got a star on its back. And it can give you some nasty stuff. So it gets the name from the large white star-shaped dot located on the back of young adult females, not from Texas. And males don't have the dot. Good times. So adult females and males are both reddish-brown. The male ticks have a geometric black pattern on their back. And when they fed and are engorged, they turn grayish-brown. And the larvae and nymphs of both sexes are translucent yellow. Ugh. And they have oval to roundish bodies. And the female ticks can be as little as an eighth of an inch when unengorged and half an inch when they're engorged, and same as male ticks. And Lone Star ticks are aggressive biters. If they find you, they will bite you. And they prey through their entire lifespan, larvae, nymphs, adults, and they will bite humans, pets, livestock, wild outdoor animals. But the larvae don't carry disease, thank goodness. So tick saliva can irritate your skin, but not every bite transmits the disease-causing bacteria or viruses. So when you get redness and discomfort at the site of a bite, it may require medical attention, and you can have these symptoms without contracting an illness. So you can get STARI, which is Southern Tick Associated Rash Illness. And so the bacteria that causes STARI, they're not sure what it is. It causes a round rash within 7 days. It looks similar to the bullseye rash associated with Lyme and not always accompanied by symptoms. So the symptoms can be a bullseye rash ranging from 6 to 10 centimeters, a headache, fever, muscle and joint pain, and fatigue, similar to Lyme disease. You can get ehrlichiosis from Lone Star ticks. You can get ehrlichiosis also from Ixodes ticks, the ones that give you Lyme disease, but you can get ehrlichiosis. Whereas you can't get Lyme disease from a Lone Star tick, you can get ehrlichiosis. Good times. So it's an umbrella term for multiple diseases caused by Ehrlichiosis chaffeensis. And there's more Ehrlichiosis or Ehrlichia species. There's Ehrlichia ewingi and Ehrlichia murus euclarensis. So that, I think murus means they found it on a mouse. The murus is from a mouse. Actually, I'm not sure if that's right. Mouse might be muse. Anyway, so somebody, they either found it in Eau Claire or the person who discovered it was Eau Claire. So infected ticks transmit to these bacteria through the bites. And if you get ehrlichiosis, it can be headache, chills, fever, muscle ache, stomach ache, nausea, and vomiting. So ehrlichiosis, you're often sicker than if you get Lyme disease. Lyme disease can be slow and insidious and hang around, and you can get very sick from Lyme disease, but not necessarily. Ehrlichiosis, if you have it, you're probably going to know you have it, and you're going to be a lot sicker. And then there's tularemia. It's rare, and it's potentially fatal with several subtypes. That's great. It's caused by Francisella tularensis bacteria, and I don't always test for it, but if you see Dr. Bazile in Ashford, he's a Lyme specialist, he frequently tests for it. The bacteria's point of entry determines which subtype you have, and it's known as rabbit fever or deer fly fever. Transmission to humans occurs through tick bites, mosquitoes. You can get tularemia from a mosquito bite, or contact with infected animals or birds. If you inhale the bacteria or drink contaminated water, you can get it that way too. The symptoms of the condition vary based on the subtype you have, and it can start anywhere from 1 to 21 days after infection, but it usually comes on between 3 and 5 days. Tick bites transmit Francisella tularensis through the skin, and that will cause ulceroglandular tularemia, which is the most common form. So the symptoms will be you'll get a skin ulcer at the bite site, you'll get painful swollen lymph glands, usually in the armpits or groin, and flu-like symptoms, fever, chills, muscle aches. Then there's Heartland virus. Who knew? I didn't know there's a Heartland virus. And it's potentially fatal. And it's part of the genus Banda virus. Lone Star tick bites can transmit the Heartland virus to humans and animals. It's been found in raccoons, coyotes, deer, and moose. The first reported cases were in Missouri in 2009. Since then, there have been cases in 11 states across the South and Midwest, which is why it's called Heartland virus. So they haven't seen it. So we don't need to worry about it so much here in the Northeast. But sometimes you might travel to the Midwest. Then you have to be concerned. So the symptoms occur within 2 weeks of transmission. Sometimes they may be severe and require hospitalization. And guess what you get? Joint pain, fever, nausea, diarrhea, bruising, fatigue, decreased appetite. Diagnostic testing may identify clinical symptoms. You might have lower than typical white blood cells and platelets and increased liver enzymes. By the way, those blood values, lower than typical white blood cells or higher than typical white blood cells and platelets and also increased liver enzymes can occur with pretty much any of the tick-borne illnesses. I've diagnosed people with tick-borne illness because they had elevated liver enzymes. I looked at it and said, we're not sure why you have elevated liver enzymes. I have to test. And one of the things you test when somebody comes in with elevated liver enzymes is tick-borne illness. So then there's the bourbon virus, which you get in Louisiana. I'm just kidding. It's a relatively new, potentially fatal disease. It's part of the genus Thogotovirus. The bourbon virus, is not named for the drink or from Bourbon Street in New Orleans. It's named for Bourbon County, Kansas, where it was first discovered. So there's a Bourbon County in Kansas. Who knew? Lone Star ticks and other ticks may transmit this virus. Currently, medical professionals have identified a small number of bourbon virus cases, in several Midwestern and Southern states. Kansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma seem to be the states where infection is most common as of 2022. So, again, not something we're going to see so much here. Again, you can get fever, fatigue, rash, body aches, headaches, nausea, and vomiting. If you get bitten by a Lone Star tick, remove it immediately. Same deal, pointed, fine tip tweezer. Try to get the entire tick out of your skin. Don't twist or squeeze the tick's body, as that may break off parts of its mouth. Again, if you have mouth parts in you, just leave them. They'll come out on their own. The thing is, that's why you want to pull gently, because if you hit the tick harshly, it will barf up its saliva into your body, and you're more likely to get an infection. So some commercial labs offer tick testing. Instead of disposing of the tick, you can send it to the lab to see if it has specific bacteria or virus. Although the CDC does not recommend this practice, the reason is just because the tick has an illness doesn't mean that you have, and it's an extra step. On the other hand, I don't know, if I had a tick and I knew that it had Lyme in it, I would do some preventative care. I think it's better to know than not to know. So there's definitely companies that will test your tick for you. So you want to let a healthcare professional know you're bitten by a Lone Star tick. Given the number of diseases transmitted through tick bites, a doctor may prescribe antibiotics even if you don't have symptoms. So you're probably going to get prophylactic antibiotics, which is not a bad idea. I mean, you know, you don't want to take antibiotics all the time, but Dr. Horowitz, David Horowitz, who's the Lyme specialist in Hyde Park, New York, I saw him speak once 10, 15 years ago, and he said, listen, if you get bitten by a tick, better to do the prophylactic antibiotics and risk some dysbiosis than to risk the neurological symptoms of tick-borne illness. So because, you know, you can get some dysbiosis from antibiotics, but you can take Saccharomyces boulardii, you can take probiotics, and you can drink kefir and eat probiotic-containing foods to minimize the effects of the antibiotics. But to get, when we talk about the nervous system in homeopathy, the nervous system is part of the deepest miasms. So miasms are deeply inherited tendencies and the umbrella of systems that the homeopathic remedies cover. So in the miasms, you have the psoric miasm, which is mostly your skin and your digestive system, which is really a very external miasm. So remedies in the psoric miasm will help with ailments that occur mostly in the digestive system and the skin. The psychotic miasm, without a P, psychotic, that's a little bit deeper, where you get overgrowth, lymphatic symptoms, lots of discharges, colored discharges, it's a little bit deeper than the psoric miasm. And then you have the syphilitic miasm, and that's where you're starting to get into the bones and the nervous system. And once you get in there, it's very hard to get out of there. So when you have nervous system symptoms, and, you know, whereas if you have muscle symptoms are much easier to treat than nerve symptoms, and nerves take forever to heal because nerves control everything that we do, where muscles not so much. The nerves control the muscles. So your whole nervous system is the electrical system that runs your whole body. And when that gets affected, it's deep inside you and it's very hard to reach. So the thing is, a lot of these tick-borne illnesses, they go after the nervous system. They have venoms and diseases that go after the nervous system. So So the thing is, if you have a way to treat it, like, you know, the tetracyclines, like tetracycline itself and mostly doxycycline, can go after these things, you want to get it on board as soon as possible, because you don't want this disease getting into your nervous system. So Lone Star ticks are found in dense woody regions across a wide swath of the eastern U.S. It's native to many southeastern and eastern states. As temperatures have risen, the Lone Star tick's territory has expanded north throughout New England. Lone Star ticks have been found as far north as Maine, so we can get Lone Star ticks here in Connecticut. So Lone Star tick apparently likes hotter weather. And with climate change, we have hotter weather for longer up here. So ticks carry bacteria and viruses in their saliva. The saliva contains an anesthetic that masks the sensation of being bitten. That's why a lot of tick bites go undetected. And my patients will say to me, well, I wasn't bitten by a tick. And I'm like, yeah, that you know of. It can be on you, sucking your blood. You may not see it. It could be on the back of your leg, the back of your knee, the back of your body, and you never see it. And it can drop off. And now you have Lyme disease and you didn't even know you had a tick bite. So they transmit pathogens while feeding on their host, and it causes disease in humans, birds, and animals. Ticks find hosts by detecting the scent of breath or sweat, carbon dioxide. Some ticks also sense body heat. Once a tick lands on your skin, it may bite immediately or look for an area to feed upon. Ticks prepare to feed by grasping and cutting the skin. Then they insert a feeding tube into the tiny cut they've made. This just makes me so angry. The feeding tube may be barbed to keep it in place under the skin. Also makes me angry. Some ticks secrete a goo-like substance that adheres to your skin, holding them firmly in place. And they feed by sucking blood. After they've adhered themselves to your skin, they can do it for several days. Once the tick's fully engorged with blood, it drops off on its own. If a tick is carrying a pathogen, you may get sick regardless of whether the tick has dropped off or if you've manually removed it. How long it takes a tick to be attached before it transmits bacteria or virus to you depends on the disease. According to experts, it can be as little as 4 hours for tularemia or as long as 36 hours for Stari. So you can expect symptoms to appear. Lone Star ticks have saliva that can irritate and inflame your skin. If the tick bites you, you may notice the symptoms at the bite site immediately. Other symptoms may become apparent anywhere from 3 days to weeks after transmission based on the bacteria virus the tick was carrying. Usually symptoms start within 3 to 5 days. And can the Lone Star tick cause you to be allergic to red meat? Lone Star ticks can cause alpha-gal syndrome, a food allergy to red meat that comes from mammals. Such meat includes beef, pork, lamb, and other animal flesh products. Exposure to alpha-gal, alpha-galactose, is a sugar molecule found in tick saliva, triggers this allergy, according to 2021 research. Many products contain alpha-gal. Some people with alpha-gal syndrome may also be sensitive to cow's milk, gelatin, or collagen. So dogs can't really transmit diseases from a tick bite to you. Infected animals can transmit tularemia to humans, but most tick-borne illnesses can't be transmitted this way. And also, it's controversial whether you can transmit tick-borne illness between, say, you and your partner. There are those who say yes and those who say no, that tick-borne illnesses are found in saliva, they're found in semen, they're found in urine, definitely found in blood. But, you know, you have to have very intimate close contact in order to transmit it, even if you even can. So are you going to get Lyme disease from your infected partner who has, you know, just from being intimate with them? That's hard to say. Some people say yes and some people say no. It's like with HIV, just cuddling and holding hands, probably nothing's going to happen. And it's unlikely you're going to transmit it by kissing. But in terms of more intimate contact, there's probably a chance, but it's not clear. Dogs and other pets can bring infected ticks into your home. So then you need to figure out what kind of protection you want to use. Lone Star ticks are found throughout the eastern United States. They transmit a variety of bacterial and viral infections. Some diseases that Lone Star ticks transmit can be serious or fatal. And many tick-borne illnesses respond well to antibiotics and other treatments. And if you see a tick on your skin or display symptoms of a tick-borne illness, go somewhere and get looked at. Talk to somebody. Talk to me. Talk to urgent care. Go to your PCP. Go somewhere. All right. All right. So we don't have a lot of time left. So we'll get into a little bit of early symptoms of various tick-borne illnesses. So Lyme disease, if you have Lyme disease, you may have symptoms and you may not. But Lyme disease usually, the classic Lyme disease, you'll have a fever, you'll have a headache that's focused in your neck, you'll be tired, you might have neurological symptoms, you might have the first early symptoms are going to be like lightheadedness. Numbness and tingling often happens later into Lyme disease, but you might have brain fog. Brain fog can happen with acute Lyme disease. You get Lyme brain. You can't find your words, things like that, which is classic. The homeopathic mercury is, so a lot of the syphilitic miasm homeopathic remedies are metals, and one of them is homeopathic mercury, and one of the classic symptoms when you're going to prescribe homeopathic mercury is you can't find your words. Like you'll say your sentences and you'll trail off at the end of them, or you can't find words. And so I know that if I have a Lyme flare, that happens to me. I can't find words. I'll be missing words. I try to talk around the words and I can't find them. So those are early symptoms of Lyme disease. I actually think that we're going to pick up next week on early tick-borne illness symptoms, and we'll talk about some more symptoms of tick-borne illness. And we'll wrap it up here. It's getting warm in this room. This the room that we do our shows in our house is, it's a small, close room with a lot of stuff in it. And the reason we do it in this room is because it's a small, close room. So the acoustics are pretty good. You don't get a lot of echoey stuff like if you were to do it in the middle of a big room. We don't have, the foam on the walls. But there is insulation, and it's a small room, so you get decent acoustics. So I'm going to let you go and enjoy the rest of your weekend, or your week, depending on where and when you're listening. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening.